This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Hundreds of movement leaders, activists, organizers, funders, and journalists gathered in Atlanta, Georgia in June 2023 at A Light, A Line, Arise, an invitation-only conference on reparations organized by the Decolonizing Wealth Project. As the conference's media partner, Yes Media spoke with more than a dozen prominent organizers, activists, and leaders, among them Chelsea Higgs Wise, a Virginia-based activist and the co-founder and executive director of Marijuana Justice. She's also the creator and co-host of a podcast called Race Capital.
My name is Chelsea Higgs Wise. I'm the co-founder and executive director of Marijuana Justice and the creator and co-host of Race Capital, a podcast that can be found anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
So tell me, how do you relate to people how the harms of marijuana criminalization are linked to the full history of racial harm in this country, starting from mass enslavement to segregation and beyond? How do you connect those issues?
Connecting those issues about the prohibition of the war on drugs and the history of repair and reparations really is about storytelling. And it's about understanding the history right here in the United States, and that the war on drugs was really a new way to find a way to criminalize Black and Brown folks and be able to create more barriers, as well as just continue the harm that has been a legacy of this country.
So when we look at the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration, that is an extension of continued enslavement, right?
We know that the 13th Amendment actually paved the way for mass incarceration, and the war on drugs is the leading contributor to folks now being incarcerated in the United States, being the country with the largest amount of people that is incarcerated.
So when you talk about the issue of reparations as repairing and making a whole community of people, where does decriminalization of marijuana fall into that?
Well, decriminalization has to come in the picture when we look at repair. We understand particularly the criminalization of marijuana really was a gateway to incarceration, not a gateway to other drugs or other societal problems. And this is why the storytelling, it's why the lessons learned, it's why policy is really important. And we can really approach reparations around the war on drugs from many different places. But decriminalization isn't just about having possession legal. It's also about decriminalizing people that are just in proximity. It's about decriminalizing the youth. It's about decriminalizing parents that are using certain substances. And we have to really make sure that we are decriminalizing people within our own minds. Because so many times we look at folks and we automatically put a label on them, particularly if they're in proximity of drugs like marijuana.
There is a movement afoot, of course, to decriminalize marijuana in a very real way. It's a very successful movement if you think about how far it's come in terms of states legalizing marijuana in particular, not just medical use, but recreational use as well. But how much further does it have to go in terms of the country as a whole, having it decriminalized on a federal level, but also in terms of correcting past harms, because there's still people imprisoned on marijuana-related charges that shouldn't be, right?
That's exactly right. So we have been very successful across this country with over 20 states legalizing cannabis, whether that's medical or adult use. But what really has to still happen is this repair model of, are the people that have been most harmed by prohibition, have they felt that repair? We know that Black and Brown owners within the cannabis industry is only less than 4%. And so when we're even talking about the success, are we talking about capitalism, or are we talking about the folks that have actually been able to say that they feel reconciled, that they feel rehabilitated. And so when we look at where the revenues are going, is that going back to folks that have felt this harm? I know in Virginia, where we are located, we have over 500 people still imprisoned for marijuana-related offenses. And that's not including the jails. It's not including people that still have ankle bracelets walking around. And Virginia is known as the first state in the South to legalize. I always put that in quotes because it's still very much prohibited. We have this partial legalization, and we're now looking at a human rights crisis in a post-legalization world where folks are still feeling the collateral consequences because they haven't gotten their records sealed. Their family members are still in prison. And even if they get out, how are they supposed to still make a life for themselves with all of the barriers that are around? And so when we look at the war on drugs and creating reparations, it's creating a brand new world for when someone walks out their house and how they're treated as well. And that can be felt throughout anybody that's walking in our society.
So let's dig into the Virginia story a little bit more. How is it just a partial decriminalization that is enabling hundreds of people to remain imprisoned?
Well, Virginia is one of those states where folks like to call it the Wild Wild West, but that's actually a term I would love to reframe because, number one, it gives us the thoughts of cowboys and Indians, and we're looking again at the criminalization and the land grab of how we're seeing prisons take over many parts of Virginia. But in 2021, there was a large movement, particularly after 2020 and the uprisings for Black Lives, to look at how Virginia could truly reconcile their harms for the past 400 years. 1619 was 400 years from 2019. And so actually, even prior to the 2020 uprisings, that's when Marijuana Justice was founded. And unfortunately, our movement started because our governor at the time had a really horrific yearbook picture out where he was in blackface and a KKK robe. And this is when we started having conversations on the ground. What does he owe us? And we said, before he leaves office, he needs to do something that actually is going to affect us directly. And that's why we chose the decriminalization movement. And so in 2021, we fought for this. And when it came back around to passing the laws, we were able to say, yes, you need to do this right now. Now,
This is a Democratic governor, Ralph Northam.
Very right. So in 2021, we had a Democratic governor, Ralph Northam. And even though he wrote the bill for it to be legal in 2024, our folks fought really hard to have that bill amended and to decriminalize it the way that it is now, to say at least legalize possession, at least seal some records, at least legalize home grow. And we can start this movement to say we're repealing the harm. We are going to aim for repair. Now, unfortunately, later on in 2021, Virginia went what they call red, and now we have a Republican governor. And the adult sales was supposed to be passed by now in 2023 and start in 2024, but Virginia has not passed those bills. And I will say, from marijuana justice perspective, our current landscape, we are actually excited that we are still in this fight, because the way that our current administration wants to legalize, there would be no repair. And a big part that we fought really hard for in 2021 was our Cannabis Equity Reinvestment Fund. And this fund would take 30% of the cannabis revenue that was coming into state and directly reinvest that back into individuals and communities. Those words are so important to us, because individuals really do deserve that reparations and that revenue, as well as community programs. And so until our state decides that they're going to pass it with that Cannabis Equity Reinvestment Fund, we say there's no point in just legalizing it for capitalism. And so there is a fight right now in Virginia to say, yes, thank you for decriminalizing it, but no, we don't want these sales unless we know that we are going to be the beneficiaries of that revenue.
Are there models in other states that you can point to, you know, since there are 20 states where it's been legalized, where the revenues are being used to repair harm?
The examples across the United States are very slim. We got a lot of our ideas from Illinois, and shout out to those organizers that I work really closely with, and we modeled the bill very closely to them. Also, if you're watching New York and the way that they are attempting to also reinvest, New Jersey is also taking much of their revenues, about 70%, and reinvesting it. They're doing it a little bit differently. They don't have a fund, but this is why we say that it's not as successful as we would like to say as far as our legalization movement, because this is a brand new concept. Many states are now reversing and having to look back at their legislation to say, ooh, we did not include the equity. Ooh, we did not include the repair. We did not think about families, and we didn't think about intentionally where these revenues are going.
Ultimately, do you think that the federal government needs to pass not just full legalization, but also diverting revenues towards repairing harm? Because otherwise we live in this patchwork situation where the possession of this one drug can mean criminal charges in one state and not in another state.
We have to have full decriminalization. That means we have to deschedule marijuana completely. And right now, the Biden administration is talking about a possible reschedule, but that is going to maintain the prohibition. And so that means removing marijuana completely, and so that not just U.S. citizens, but also non-U.S. citizens will not continue to feel this harm. In October, Biden announced a pardon for marijuana, and many folks got very, very excited. But folks like me were continuing to remind folks that the folks that are not citizens in the United States were not feeling that benefit. And much of what we're seeing, particularly from the Biden administration and what they're saying about our equity action plans, are not coming forth. We know that the federal government is looking to look at all of their reinvestments and all of their departments to have an equity lens. And they're even doing stakeholder input and feedback. Well, marijuana is coming up in almost half of the comments, but has yet to be brought up in a Biden administration equity plan. And so it's not just for certain politicians, it's for all of the federal government and all of the legislators to make sure that we're looking at this to say, we have to deschedule this, we have to look at the revenues, we have to make sure that money is going to the state so that they could properly provide repair, and we have to look at what's happening across the borders with the DEA and many other folks that are hired and funded to continue prohibition.
So as part of this conference where people are talking about reparations broadly, do you think that there is consensus around marijuana decriminalization as part of the reparations movement? What is your goal and the step that you want to take to realize reparations or to realize the work that you do within a broad reparations framework?
Marijuana justice is really leading in Virginia, and we hope to continue to support other southern states with this movement. And what we've heard from Southerners is that reparations is what's on their mind with the war on drugs, not just legalization and access to the plant. So what we believe that we have to take a step forward with the larger reparations movement and understand that this is what we're all working on together, and that this is just one other strategy to bring repair. And it's just one other way that we have to continue to repeal the harm that's happening. So we're really excited to be at this conference and continue to work with others. We're excited to learn from longtime reparations organizers and activists, and we're excited to be part of this movement.
Do you think that finally that the issue of culture shifting really needs to be also part and parcel of this movement, not just policy shifting, but shifting the culture? You were talking earlier in the conversation around how people are just viewed when they walk out the door in the morning.
Culture shifting is the foundation of this. As we look at legalization, people are saying, well, why is the quote unquote black market still thriving? First of all, we need to cut the black market language out completely. And the reason why folks are still working with their legacy operators, is what we call them, is because they feel culturally connected. They feel comfortable with their operators. They feel comfortable with the folks that are providing them access. And for us to shift towards something different, it's going to be able to have have a conversation that just because folks don't have a license doesn't mean that they're not part of providing folks what they need. And it is this conversation that's going to take us further. It's going to talk about, this is a prison reform movement, particularly for a lot of our folks in the faith world. We're also looking at just understanding what this means for parents, for young folks. And it's so much more than policy, because in order for everyone to join us in demanding for reparations, we have to see how that impacts us in our individual lives. And it absolutely does every single day. And part of our work is showing and teaching people how.
If you could wave a magic wand and realize one specific action toward reparations, what would you like to see?
All of the money going to law enforcement, going straight to community programs.
Community programs, want to be more specific about that?
Community programs that are led by people, not directly underneath institutions and governments, that are people-led and that don't have the oversight and surveillance from government. We know what we mean by community programs. So give us the money and we'll know exactly what to do with it.
Is there a website people can find out more about what you do?
You can follow us at marijuanajustice.org and all social media at THC Justice Now.
Thank you so much, Chelsea.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Chelsea Higgs Wise, co-founder and executive director of Marijuana Justice and the creator and co-host of a podcast called Race Capital, during a recent conference on reparations in Atlanta, Georgia, produced for Yes Media, where I work as the racial justice editor. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.